Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Fat Mascara.
Look who's on the mic.
Yay. What's up? How are you?
I love these little pop-ins. I love your sabbatical that's not a sabbatical. She can't stay away from us. She loves us.
I like this one.
Just keep on working. JK. I'll pop in when it seems fun. No, not
JK,
at all.
JK.
We've been planning this interview for a while. Oh, by the way, I'm Jen Sullivan. She's Jessica Matlin.
Jess.
Welcome to
you?
Fat Mascara.
What's going on?
Oh, I've missed you, friend.
I missed you too. I've been listening.
I know you have. How are you? Is there any threat? Like, no one's threatening your spot on the mic.
My terrain.
We've had some good guest co-hosts,
though.
Haven't
we? Really good guests. Yeah, really good guests.
Yeah, both guests and guest co-hosts.
Yeah. No, I know, it's been really fun. It's been a good listen. I've been learning a lot.
Maybe I'll take a sabbatical later in the year and you put it together so I can have, like, I feel like it's a good place to, like, reset.
It's gonna
and
be
listen.
A wild format. And now you come on. And now you come on. And now you come off. And now you come on. And now I talk.
You know, when you separate yourself from your work, like, the artist needs to step back from the
artist.
Sculpture.
I think that'd be really fun. That would be, like, a really cool project.
Go on, continue.
I, like, take the mic for a couple weeks, and it's, like, actually, that happened with Hollywood Raw. I listen to Hollywood. Did you guys listen to Hollywood Raw? I fucking love that podcast. And the other night, it was Dax Holt on it. And I didn't feel badly for him because he's great, but something happened with his co-hosts. And, it was very, like, it was so real. It was, like, yeah, his, like, son was sick or had, like, a soccer thing. And he was like, yeah, so it's just me tonight. And it was just him monologuing all the news. He was like, I don't know if you're going to like it. Maybe this sucks. And I was like doing laundry, listening to it. And I was like, go. You're doing great. You're doing great. And I wrote him feedback in the Spotify thing. And I was because I felt for him because he's like, I don't know. And at the end, he was like, maybe you thought this was boring. I don't know. I tried my best.
That's me on the little pre-intros before the guest co-host. I'm like, being really vulnerable, guys. It's just me here.
I was thinking about you, but he was like, but his show is like, yeah, it's like all news and it's all about their banter.
Yeah. Sans banter. It's hard to do a podcast all by yourself.
Yeah. It was, God, I'm so glad we're not recording video for this because I'm like, I have no eyelashes.
Yeah. Jess is a busy person. We both are today, but in case you came here not for us, but I know you miss our banter. So you kind of did. We've got a third musketeer in the studio.
Wait, Jen, really quickly, before we get to him, do you ever do eyelash tint?
I do, yeah. You know I'm turning gray everywhere, so I tint my eyelashes and I tint my eyebrows.
See, I did that. I did it once and it washed out in like 2 weeks. And I'm like, why am I not paying for this?
Yeah, it didn't last long and it was pretty pricey.
It was really pricey. And it was like, yeah, I think it's just mascara for me.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we figured that out while on the mic, while Carlos was listening to the episode. And he's like, are they going to get to my interview?
Yeah. He's like, wait a second. He's like, this is my moment. Okay. So Carlos Huber is, if you don't know who he is, you very likely have smelled his work. Jenna's going to rattle off his CV in just a moment. But this man is so talented, so charming, so good looking. I hope we have a big picture of him.
He's so good-looking. Yeah, we've been doing the cover art for the podcast is now the guest's photo. Because I was thinking when I listen to podcasts, I'm always like, who's talking? You know, you want to see who they are. I think it's helpful to have a picture of the person.
He's the whole package. He's so nice, so humble.
How about I give you a little bit more detail on that, shall I? Okay. He loved your hyperbolic hype up, though. That was really helpful.
Okay. No, but he's so lovely.
He is lovely. It's a great interview. But in case you're not aware of who he is, he's a fragrance developer. He's the founder of Arkiste, a line of fragrances that restore authentic historical experiences through scent. I mean, can you come up with a better description than that?
An intellectual.
Yeah. You've heard us go on about how perfume can be nostalgic. Well, this is a man who has literally turned that concept into a company. And he doesn't just do it for Arkiste. He's also developed scents for brands such as Trudon, St. Regis Hotels and Resorts, J. Crew, El Palacio de Hierro, Vacation, Tequila Clase Azul. I mean, there's more and more. I'll put the links to all of them in the episode recap, which is down in the little show description in case you don't know. So we're going to talk about what it is that a fragrance developer does and how that position fits into the alchemy of the fragrance creation process, just like evaluators and perfumers do. But we'll also talk about his background and architecture, explain his work, think about the smells of some Arkiste things. And for those people who have been listening to the podcast since we talk about fragrance a lot, and they're like, I don't know what these notes smell like. He's going to give you some tricks for remembering what different perfume notes smell like. So helpful. So you're going to learn a lot. You're going to have fun. Sit back, relax. Let's welcome Carlos Huber in the virtual studio.
Carlos, this is way overdue. Sometimes we have someone on the show, and I always feel like a little weird in the beginning because it feels like we've had a party and I've sent the invite too late.
Right. Well, listen, it's never too late. And I'm certainly happy to join any party at whichever moment. So like, okay. Thank you for having me.
You know what I mean, though?
Yeah, of course.
I think I'm in like this cycle of birthday party cycle. And when like you like give the kid an invite that was like a little late. You know what I mean? You slip it into the
Carlos
backpack.
Isn't that kid. Don't worry.
Okay. Yeah. Cause you should have been like on the tier A list, but it just, we've had a lot of, there's a lot going on, but Carlos, you come up all the time and you come up through your own brand, which we'll get to. You come up through other people's brands and you're just one to know, but we know you've been traveling a lot. We're trying to pin you down. Where are you today in this gorgeous environment?
I'm back home here in New York City.
And it's unsurprising that you're in a beautiful environment because you're all about environment, right? You're all about space.
Yeah, and this is definitely my favorite room in the house, which is like the living room. And I have this like library behind me that is really, I think, kind of like a background to my life. But I'm very honored to be here. I'm very, honestly, what you say is just sort of like a big kind of feather in my cap to be able to like do what I do and then just to be able to do it again and again and again. Like that's like what recognition is for.
To be able to create.
Yeah.
And like people like enjoy what you create.
Yeah, because that's the whole thing about like this incredible field we're in. I feel so lucky that I get to do this as a fragrance developer and that I get to work with perfumers, that I get to work on perfume formulas with them, that I get to kind of translate inspiration and research into something that is experiential.
Well, let's back up a second because we have you on because you are this amazing expert in fragrance, but you're not, I want to be clear, you're not a nose. You're not like a traditional born in Grasse, grandpa, great grandpa,
no,
generation, snooty roux, you know,
yeah.
Frenchy.
No. I come from a very different background.
We just lost 10% of our audience from France. Thanks, Jess. So,
oh, they have a sense of humor.
And listen, I'm wearing a France rugby jersey, you know? So like,
yeah.
rooting for France in every way.
So what is a fragrance developer?
So a fragrance developer can usually be, think of it this way, even before getting into like the fragrance industry, you have a house to build and you have a builder, but you also need an architect. And so the architect is the one that like draws the plan, right? Is the one that you're going to meet with that is going to translate your needs and your program into a habitable environment, right? And that will be translated for the builder in construction terms and construction materials.
And is the builder our friends from Grasse?
Exactly. The builders the perfumers.
Okay. All right.
Who, so, to be clear, are not all in Grasse, but yes.
Yeah, right. Yes. Well, yeah, that is changing as well. Okay.
So the builders is the perfumer. The fragrance developer acts as the architect, and it's the mediator or the interpreter between the client and the perfumer. So he should be able to speak kind of like in some way both languages. He should be able to like understand what the market needs or what the client wants, what the brand is, and then talk to the perfumer and talk in fragrance notes, you know, molecules, accords, understand a little bit like what the expectations on concentration and diffusion and longevity are, all that kind of stuff.
Now, nobody could just like pop in, jump in and be like, okay, well, I love fragrance. I should be a fragrance developer too. Like you had to have something to bridge that gap, and your background, and I'll get to that in a little bit, is not in your first background is not in fragrance. It's in architecture, right? And
yep.
Interiors and space. But what helped you learn more about fragrance?
I had always been interested in fragrance and always interested in smells, I should say. Even as a kid, I was just always very aware and very much into scents. I would always like comment on them. I always loved scented products, whether they be colognes or soaps or just anything I could get my hands on, even as a boy. And then, as luck would have it, and it actually goes back to France in a way, and I am very thankful for that because I did a year abroad during university in Paris studying in architecture there. And so I learned French there. Went back to Mexico, finished my architecture degree, and then worked in Spain for a bit, moved to New York to do another master's in historic preservation. And here in New York, most of my friends that first year that I came ended up being French for some reason. And partly I think it was because I wanted to keep like practicing the language, and it was just something like a kind of like a comfort thing. You know, I had made friends along the way back in Mexico and Spain that were kind of associated with these other people. And so I had a lot of French friends here in New York. And in one of these sort of like social gatherings, I met Yann Vanier, who's a perfumer for Givaudan. And we were kind of a part of the same group of friends. It turns out that we also knew an evaluator, which an evaluator can be almost like a fragrance developer as well, because she's basically the sommelier in, and I say she because actually, interestingly, most of those roles are covered by women, which is, I think, a very telling thing of like, again, being a mediator, being like somebody who critiques the perfumer's work and can evaluate and move it forward. Anyway, we had a friend in common who was an evaluator. And then they, in turn, introduced me into Rodrigo Flores Rue, who is also at Givaudan, of course, kind of like iconic perfumer. And it turns out he's like the only Latin American perfumer working in fine fragrance. So they introduced me to him. We immediately connect over the fact that we're both from Mexico City. We both are, even he is actually of French origin. I am not. But both of us are these sort of Francophiles that are kind of like a line or associated with this French group. And we just had a lot of also like inside jokes about Mexico City that just made us bond. So I was always fascinated about fragrance. I would always ask them questions. And a couple of times they invited me to the Givaudan lab just to see how things were made and how perfume development went on. And one day, Rodrigo, basically after like grueling him with questions, he says that I asked him to give me classes. The way I remember it is he offered it because I think I would have been too scared to ask him for such a like a big deal question, you know? But we did do that. And so he actually taught me for over a year and a half. I would go every Tuesday after 6 p.m. to his office when he was done with work. And we would have an hour of fragrance class. And we would talk about everything from perfume history.
I'm seeing a movie montage in my head, by the way.
Yeah.
Getting your backpack on, heading over to Juvedon.
I gotta say, it was also a very New York kind of moment. I was at the time working for Ralph Lauren store development.
Okay. Were you doing like interiors?
I was doing the stores. I was working with, as part of the architecture team in store design. So interiors, everything from like every fixture and piece of furniture that you see designed in a Ralph Lauren store. And usually, because they go into old buildings, they do a lot of sort of like historical architecture redesign, adaptive reuse, and in a way, preservation work. So that's why I started working for them. And it, I took that job also because it was a New York opportunity. I could get like an architecture job and another restoration job if I went back to Mexico City or if I moved to Europe. But to work like that in such a big fashion company here in Midtown New York was like, I think, a unique opportunity. So I was at the time working for Ralph Lauren and I would finish my day.
You're going to night school with with Rodrigo. Not a bad life. Yeah,
exactly. 57th Street and 5th and go to Givaudan and have like night school.
Shoot across town. Yeah. Yeah.
It was really, there was something really fabulous in New York about it, you know?
I'd say.
These like incredible companies and I had a little bit of a window and access to. So that was kind of amazing. And like, I did kind of understand, whoa, this guy is not just anyone. He is like a master in perfume. And I thought that was an incredible opportunity.
Now, Carlos, most people are not working at Ralph Lauren doing restoration projects all around Manhattan and then hanging out with Rodrigo at night. You're clearly extremely talented, and you did have access to brilliant people and talent around you. But I feel like there's something here that people listening can take and apply to their own careers. What do you think that is?
I would say, well, first of all, thank you for what you say. I mean, that's like a huge compliment. To be honest with you, like you said, I don't come from this sort of like family with like a chateau in France that just had this background or had this.
That's what I meant when I said the Grasse thing, by the way. No offense to my Grasse friends. But like, there's a pedigree is what I'm saying.
Exactly. And, you know, I kind of like emancipated around like age 21 because I wanted to move away, because I wanted to go to Europe and do all this. Like, I kind of had to do it on my own. To be honest, it wasn't easy. And then I just kind of worked really hard on getting the best result out of like my architecture degree, always trying to get like good jobs that would land me into like then a good school for a master's. And then, I don't know, try to like get something that was, you know, work hard and like can maybe push a little bit more and go a little bit further in things that were like maybe a level of discomfort or like sort of risk. Mm-hmm. So it's not that like I was giving any of these things too easily. I think it was maybe just because I was a little bit like out in the wild and not at home in the comfort of my house, my family household, or sort of like the comfort of the square and the pattern of this is how you do things. I kind of like needed to be more inventive and be a little bit more creative with what I need to do. So my advice to that is, if this is something you want to do, if you're passionate about it, just push forward.
Be uncomfortable.
Yeah, be uncomfortable. And don't expect it to happen necessarily tomorrow. It's also not necessarily something that happens, I think. Even now, there's always more that you can be doing. There's more success to be had. There's better sales to achieve. There's still discomfort, you know? There's still challenges. So I would say, if you want to do something like this, drive forward with passion and with hard work and don't expect everything to happen overnight. I think everything overnight is just, they're little things and just enjoy the joys of that. But don't think of them as like, this is it, I've arrived. I don't think I've arrived myself. I still think there's a lot to move forward and to push still.
It's also because you were cross-disciplinary with getting out of your comfort zone. Like you were working in architecture, learning about fragrance. That's probably, I don't know, tell us, is that how you went then from starting to become a fragrance developer?
I mean, that's another good case. You know, like I was studying, I did architecture and all this, but because I was in Mexico City with my family and everything, it's not that I had a guarantee of like, oh, I'm going to open my own office tomorrow. It takes a while as an architect to like start with somebody's team. And a lot of times you just end up doing that all your life. So I had to get creative also of like, okay, what am I going to do to move forward a little bit more or have like a better career. Or I didn't have it necessarily like the silver spoon in my mouth, just like, okay, here's your package. This is like your role in life. I had to be
creative.
Yeah,
but a lot of people have that feeling. They don't go and start a fabulous fragrance company, you know?
Well, this is also maybe another trick, I think. And this is another story. I started Arkeist. My first thought was, this is an opportunity. I have perfumers of the level of Rodrigo Flores and Jan Vanier that want to create perfumes with me and that like my idea. They've advised me to work on a business plan and make this a brand so that we can open an account at Givaudan and they can actually work on the fragrances. I thought that was an amazing opportunity. If it all went to like creating those things and selling 10 bottles of them and that was it, and then it failed, I thought that was still an amazing opportunity that was worth exploring because I had a huge chance. As somebody who loved fragrance, I was going to have a chance to create a collection of perfumes based on my ideas. That was the beauty of it. In that sense, I think maybe it's a positive. In some ways, maybe it's a negative. I didn't necessarily come with like a huge thought out investment plan for like the 10 years forward. And this is like stage one and this is stage,
just
you know,
wanted
like
to make a good juice.
Do you think a lot of people think that way right now with the big, the 10-year plan, the sell by this, the all
yes.
that?
I think we are in this age of startups and just incredible entrepreneurship, which is very commendable, of course, and all that. I think this has now become more part of like everyone's plan or...
Yeah, you started Arkeist when I was at Cosmo. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, 2010 I started and 2011 I launched in the fall.
Okay, so it was before I was at Cosmo.
It was a little bit, I think like the niche world was starting to be more noticeable. You did have like brands like Byredo and of course Frederic Malle and Le Labo that were starting to get big, but it was still a very sort of like gentle, very artisanal. Most people were independents that were very passionate. They didn't come from finance. It didn't come from tech. There wasn't like a big group behind most people. And so we were all sort of like going along, doing our thing and creating our fragrances and being introduced to retailers. And then also there was no social media, really. I mean, that was not a thing yet. Maybe it was starting with Facebook, but it wasn't something that was still marketable, right? You didn't have that yet. And so it was a much more traditional place. And you worked with PR to get desk sides with editors. It was more one-on-one.
Are you still doing a lot of desk sides?
I do, yeah.
Jen's shaking her head.
Yeah, I mean, Jen has actually, we've had like
well,
a desk side properly.
We were in your friend's apartment, I think.
Exactly.
He's a storyteller. This is like kind of why we got into this podcast, because you'd have these fabulous conversations with people at work in beauty. And you're like, people need to hear this. This is a good story.
Well, that's also why I was interested in doing this with Arkeist, because, you know, Rodrigo, for example, told me a story about how he created Clinique Happy. And what the background story of that is, really, not the marketing brief for Clinique, right? And it is about, it's a two sort of like prong thing. He wanted to create this fragrance for his sister's wedding, which he considered like the happiest person he knew. And as an inspiration for his sister's wedding, one thing that he thought about was a Mexican piñata. So remember, like, we're Mexican. And so he's telling me about it, and I was like, it's the tangerines inside the piñata that inspired you. Because normally, in a traditional piñata, you would have tangerines and mandarins and oranges, like things like that. And so when you hit it, you definitely get that burst of citrus.
That's beautiful. I did not know that.
It was beautiful, neat, clean. It's a beautiful, like, direct reference.
I wish that was in the campaign. That
right?
would make me want to buy. Not, I'd had a pretty good campaign when it came out. The dance, wasn't that the dancing? Yes, but now they need to move on.
Yeah.
And if I saw a beautiful smashed pinata, a big macro shot of a smashed pinata.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is joyous.
Well, Carlos, we want to hear some of those kind of stories of inspiration that you've had in
not,
your work
not just
as
your
well.
Mentor.
Not just your mentor, obviously. So we're going to get into that. Before we do, there was one thing you said I wanted to pick up on, which is that you're sort of like a translator. I was thinking this man speaks at least three languages, but his job is also like translating both a client's creative brief to a perfumer or mm-hmm. your inspiration to a perfumer or the product when it's finished to the consumer. Yeah. So this has come up a little bit on the podcast recently. People have written in to me and they're like, when you and Jess and your guests talk about perfume notes, what am I supposed to do if I don't know what vetiver smells like? I don't know what a rose smells like. And I was like, let me put this to Carlos, because part of your job is to convey that scent to someone who might not know the notes, right? How do you do that?
First of all, I think when you are smelling fragrances, let's say you're at a store or at a counter and you're smelling things, try not to necessarily think of like, I need to identify the ingredient and by its name. Think more of like the memories that come to you or the associations that come to you. So, for example, the way I started remembering vetiver was I thought of almost like rattan and raffia and those types of dry kind of fibers that have like a woody scent, but it's very dry, right? It's not this sort of like soft, luscious, velvety, woody scent, right? So I started thinking of that. Then I learned, and this was like a little bit like through conversation and research, that in India, for example, they would make blinds out of vetiver, and then they would spray them with water when it was really hot to perfume the environment. And they would have this like refreshing scent of vetiver. So it's like, that makes sense. The raffia, the rattan, then these sort of like blinds of like vetiver. I thought that was like the weaving of them. Like, I thought that was really interesting. So that kind of like chain of association then makes me identify that smell with vetiver. Similarly with anything else, when you think of like tonka bean, but then let's say it reminds you of almonds or cherries.
Well, you have to at some point then smell the accord or the note of a tonka bean.
Yeah, or you start identifying it through like maybe some of your favorite scents. And
yeah, and realize, start
understanding there's a nuttiness there, right? Like a sweet kind of nuttiness.
What's your little memory game you play for the nuttiness of tonka?
I always associated, I mean, this is like a personal thing. I don't know how correct I am here or not, but I always associated a little bit with almond, marzipan, cherry, the cherry pit as well. Then I start thinking of like, I don't know, there's like something sweeter, of course, like in tonka, and something a little bit medicinal, but like in a pleasant way. So there's different things. It's a game of association, and it's more like experiential and memory driven than trying to be the molecular scientist and understanding the raw materials.
I think people get really tripped up with that, and it becomes like too intellectual. Fragrance is very intellectual to a lot of people.
And it really shouldn't. If you really want to get into it intellectually, by all means, get into it. But this is something that I've experienced a lot recently, and I've seen, and people really get obsessed with every field, right? And they want to like pick and really dissect every formula. And suddenly you have people that are very, very, have very strong opinions, intellectual opinions on perfumes. And I'm always fascinated by that because I'm like, oh my God, you're like sucking the joy out of it.
Yeah.
And I really don't think, I mean, listen, there's perfumes that I like and perfumes I don't like. But I don't believe in terrible perfumes. Every perfume, every scent out there
not even
has
one.
A place to be. I just think like there's a time and place for a lot of stuff. I just think there's like working in fragrance, I find so much joy and so much interest and so much variety. I find it very frustrating to make it like an academy of like, this is the only correct way and everything else is like crap.
It's that guy, you order a bottle of wine at dinner and the guy that's like, and then he's like, swirl, 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 swirl. And he's like, yeah. Having a,
and you're like, just, go home.
Okay.
Get out of here.
Enjoy the glass of wine.
Yeah.
You know?
And like, at sometimes a like a cheap red wine that you get, like that the house wine is like delicious and good enough. And it has a purpose. It's like wanting everything, every item in your wardrobe to be like a bespoke suit or a made-to-measure dress. Not everything has to be that glad. You can also have an Old Navy t-shirt and enjoy
that sound
it.
Again.
You know I like wine, so I hang out sometimes with people that like wine, and it's just, yeah, they're filtrating it through their mouth so they can smell it.
Oh my God, that's so disgusting.
and I'm not saying I like everything. I'm not saying that like I would wear everything. I'm not saying like I can still sort of like say, ugh, that like reeks. But I'm not writing a letter to that perfumer and saying, how dare you? And that's what's happening in the world right now.
Well, that's just people think they have a right to weigh in on everything, don't they?
I'm just picturing someone angrily writing a letter like, dear Jacques,
how dare you put the note of, you
go
know,
into like just social media and TikTok and Instagram and be like, you have these people that are just so insanely upset about just whatever a perfumer did. Like, really upset.
You realize something's going on in their life. It's not about your fragrance that they're upset about.
Oh my God.
Those people have problems.
I know.
I want to bring your background in architecture back into this, and I'm curious if you lean on it still in your work today. Like, when you're talking about fragrance or the terminology you use or the structures of fragrances, does it inform your work?
Every day, every way. I'll tell you why. Like, architecture, part of it is obviously ideation and drafting and drawing a plan and all that. A lot of it is project management. A lot of it is administration. I mean, like, a good architect is not out there just because of him, like, drawing something on a napkin. And he had to set up an office. He had to create a whole, like, business around it, market himself as a successful architect to get clients. He has to, again, translate and be able to talk to a client and then to a vendor and a construction contractor and negotiate with everyone. So there's a lot of that. I have to come up and program productions, right? They're not constructions, but they're productions. I have to source ingredients and different things like glass bottles and caps and pumps and stickers and boxes from different vendors. Have to make sure that all of it is ready at like an approximate date and then produce, do quality control on that.
You're leading the whole project. You're PMing the whole thing. You're doing getting the pricing. You're doing all that.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of course, like, you know, besides like fragrance development, there's designing the packaging, understanding like scale, proportion, that kind of thing. I do think that my background in architecture has helped me a lot with that. I kind of do everything myself and sometimes it's challenging, but I think like definitely my background has pushed me to do that myself.
Yeah.
And then even in fragrance terms, I think it was easier for me to understand the way a composition is constructed in top notes, hard notes, base notes, just from like the simple kind of architecture of like a foundation, a structure, and then a layer of decoration or ornament, right? Like if you think of a wall, it's made out of like these layers, the same way that a perfume is made out of notes. So that may be a simplified metaphor for it, but I think it actually is real.
So many of your scents are like location based and they're around like a setting, a scene, like a literal, like geographical space. Where is one of the places that you've really enjoyed going, so to speak, with fragrance? One of your most successful scents, doesn't need to be commercially, but just in your mind, like what was well executed?
I think definitely the beach is always like a big source of inspiration. I mean, it sounds very, and I don't mean it in a banal way. It sounds maybe a little bit like simplified, but I think the evocation of the beach is actually incredibly rich because you have a lot of different smells going on. You have the ocean, you have the salty breeze, you have the minerality of the sand. You might have obviously some like flora and just botanical aspect to it.
You're not at the Jersey Shore if that's going on, but yes.
But if you are the Jersey Shore, there's other notes, there's other grasses and other things that like would also be part of like the smell. So again, it's actually way more specific and way more detailed oriented than just like the beach. It's just like a simple thing, right? And I also like that sunscreen is such a huge part of it. And
yeah, I love that.
Two of the fragrances that I've done that I have become really successful and one kind of like begot the other are Sydney Rockpool and then Vacation. And Sydney Rockpool came first. Sydney Rockpool was inspired by pretty much like by a day at Bondi Beach in Sydney. And I was kind of blown away. I think it's like, honestly, like the most beautiful urban beach in the world. It's kept impeccably. Like there's not trash anywhere. I don't know how they do it, but like they do an impeccable job grooming that beach. It's this beautiful golden sand that's like the right texture, you know, underfoot. It's just like soft enough. And then it's just like you have this like blazing, crazy, no ozone layer sky that on a good day is like the brightest blue you can think of. And it's just, it's a beautiful bay. It's just the right size. And it's just really stunning when you're there.
Sounds worth the flight.
Oh, absolutely. And I was like, my first time going to Australia, I was like, I don't know how interesting this is going to be. It's just going to, it's just another Anglo country with another version of like the US and Canada and all that kind of stuff. And I was really blown away by just the people, the food, even landscape wise, like Sydney's such a beautiful, stunning city with a harbor and all these like beautiful beaches and bays and the flora. It's full of like white flowers. Literally every block is like frangipani, magnolias. You have gardenias everywhere, jasmine all over the place. And I just had like a really wonderful experience. I've been over like 8 times and I have like these incredible retailer there that has just been wonderful. And so every time I would go, I would always have these like really beautiful days that were like a picture perfect beach day. And it was in 2006 that I started working on Sydney Rock Pool and I wanted to recreate that smell. I had a Australian sunscreen that I loved that you can pretty much like only get there that smells very, very, just very focused on coconut. It's the most coconut forward sunscreen I've ever smelled.
Which sunscreen is it?
It's called Letan. L-E and then T-A-N.
Oh, it's not, is it available here? No.
You might be able to find it somehow.
I know what you're talking about.
I don't think they have distribution. Like, I don't think they have like a wide distribution in the States. So I really love the smell of that. And when you're at the beach, you really smell it on people because it's also something that like a lot of Australians are like raised with. So everyone has a bottle. So you smell it when you're at the beach. So I kind of wanted to incorporate that. So one thing that we did when I brought that sunscreen back, we did a headspace on my arm on what the sunscreen smelled like drying on skin. So it's not necessarily the smell of the sunscreen that we're replicating. It's
the,
actually
like, baked version of it.
It's the baked version of it. And I literally held my hand in the sun for like an hour and then brought it back. And then we did like the headspace. So that was really cool. And it was also something that like when I came with the idea to Rodrigo, he was like, coconut? Like, it's like not, that's not sophisticated. Like, what do you mean? Like, that's not going to be niche.
I can picture him saying that.
Yeah. I thought it was maybe not the most interesting idea, but I kind of pushed. And I just think the result is incredible because you have this really warm, inviting, easy, lovely kind of beachy scent, but there's a lot going on there. There's like a driftwood note. There's like the sandy kind of sandstone minerality of it. You have like the coconut, of course. You have a frangipani and jasmine that's also floating there in the background, just reminding you of like the walk down to the beach. And I think it's like a very kind of upgrade on a beach scent. And that's one of the scents that then got me vacation. interested in working with us.
Did they approach you because of that scent or tell us that origin story?
They approached me just out of the blue, just because they found out that I was a fragrance developer and I had my brand and everything. And I guess they researched the brand and everything and they were interested in talking to me. And then we had a meeting where I showed them Sydney Rock Pool and I told them like sunscreen has been an inspiration for me before. And when they smelled that, they were like, oh, this is good.
And just to give people the headline, because I feel like it was like a subtle segue, you did the scents for vacation, the sunscreen brand.
Exactly. So I am sort of like the scent partner for vacation. I work as fragrance developer for everything that is scented, which...
Now it's there's so much stuff.
Everything, exactly. And then we mostly work with Givaudan as a fragrance house, and we mostly work with, like, Rodrigo has created the EDTs, has created the scent of like the classic lotion, but we've also worked with other incredible perfumers there. That have done
some of the other iterations.
Rodrigo
still works together on that.
Oh, yeah. So the beach is definitely a place that I think I go back to. And it's not exclusively Australia. Of course, like it can be different places. I have a scent coming up for this summer that is about the Adriatic. So it's about like Croatia and it's an island in Croatia. And that was also sort of like a mind-blowing experience in olfactive terms of like just all this bounty of pine needles and rosemary and lavender and fig and just everything you can think of Mediterranean.
That sounds like a place I want to go.
Oh, yeah. We've been going for 3 years and the scent, like the experience of being there through your nose is what's like the most rewarding thing.
What's that one going to be called? Can we know?
Well, it's coming in June and it's going to be called A Grove by the Sea.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Listen, there are so many skincare products on the market claiming to help reduce fine lines and wrinkles, and you know I will try most of them. But how do you know your products are actually working? Some research to back up the claims. That's why Jess and I are all about Ritual. They created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted a clinical study to take the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual's Hyacera is now a part of my skincare routine, and I got in the habit of taking it every day by putting the cute little purple jar right next to my sunscreen. It looks nice on my vanity, and let's be honest, I love that. But once I stuck with the habit, I really noticed a difference in my skin. I am not the only one. In a clinical study, taking Hyacera for 90 days led to a 3.6-time reduction in crow's feet wrinkles as compared to placebo, and it led to a 2.9 increase in skin smoothness. I also like that they're easy to swallow. The capsules sort of taste like vanilla. They're not all weird and fishy like some other supplements. Plus, Ritual is a certified B Corp, something we learned about on a recent episode. And all their supplements, including the Daily Protein and their Sleep Bio Series Melatonin supplement, are vegan, gluten-free, and made traceable. Do what Jess and I did. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/mascara. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/mascara for 25% off.
I want to ask, without, you know, maybe you don't want to tip off your competitors, but is there like a place that like people are like not going scent wise that you think they should be going? Like, where are we not going right now?
You mean as sort of like fragrance ingredients and styles and notes and that kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It could be ingredients or a story that's in your mind that you're like, this could be a fragrance.
Yeah.
The reason why I like sort of like architectural preservation, archaeology, like I'm a huge believer in nostalgia. I love nostalgia. I like dwell in it, and like it just connects your memories to your present. It just like sort of like informs a lot of what I do. And I love nostalgic scents. And one of those things that I love are very powdery baby talcum, baby powder kind of scents. I love powdery scents. I think there's something really, for me, very comforting about them. And at the same time, something naughty about them. One time I bought this baby cologne that I kind of grew up with, and I wore it out one day. And I remember somebody coming over and be like, ooh, you smell really sexy. What is it? And I was like, it's a baby cologne. So it was very, but it made sense. It made sense. Like there is this muskiness to powdery, these types of like scents that I think is.
This is getting Freudian, attractive. Carlos.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, well, there's something about it that it smells like, just like skin, and smells like closeness and intimacy and Let's not take it somewhere like darker
no,
than
I
that.
No, I took it there. But Freud would have taken it there.
Freud
I know
would
what
have
you
like,
mean.
Freud would have had yeah. fun with that.
He would have had a field day with that. But the skin scent, the sensualness of skin and skin musk yeah. and that.
It's
like, kind
softness.
Of,
it feels private. Soft. It doesn't yeah. feel like you're making a show for anyone.
Exactly.
It's unpretentious.
And you see it, I think, a little bit now in the zeitgeist. We are kind of interested as these generations in exploring the past. There's so many like series and shows and movies that are...
They can't get enough of it.
Exactly. In the 60s and 70s and whatever. I think we are naturally kind of interested in like reclaiming or like experiencing stuff that happened before. So yeah. that's kind of like the gist of like why I started Arkeist. And again, like I think those types of nostalgic scents are for me something that we should explore more. And that actually... hopefully people will start tapping into. I think powdery scents can go from, again, from baby powder to a very dusty, dusky orris that is very sophisticated.
Yeah, there is a trend of like skin musks right now, but they're very simple.
Right.
And I want, yeah, make it a little dirtier and drier. And what did I say the other day? Dust bunnies to Jess. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like just like
yeah.
Well, it's yeah. Orris has that dry. I think dusty doesn't sound very nice, but yeah,
no, we wanted to come up with a better
word. It's a dry, papery.
I was gonna say it's paper. It's cardboard. It's dry cardboard almost. Again, I'd love that.
I think it's sophisticated. It's not. I don't think it's necessarily like a naive. It's like a.
Mm-mm.
I'm also not a huge fan of. And again, this is somebody that I already. Said there's not, I think all perfume is valid. So I'm not saying necessarily just because I don't like it, it's not good. But there's this really big trend in these very sharp metallic ambers, like really cut through, like almost cut through like skin. And that I find them to be, though I think they're interesting technically, I find them to kind of like cut through formulas and cut through perfumes and kind of almost like... don't make room for anything else. So those I'm not a huge fan of. And I think that there's a lot of perfumes that are being developed that way.
Is there like a note that you're talking about in that amber family that has that sharp metallic quality? I don't want to like name like a famous scent, but just for people who are listening, you're like, I have no idea what this man is talking about.
A lot of them are synthetic like ambers, right? They're not even really natural. They're synthetic. So they're molecules. And so I don't know how much like people would like know exactly which one it is. But they smell almost like glass cutting through something.
Okay.
If that's like an image that says something.
The less warm amber family. It's fine. We'll go off record and you'll tell me what fragrance you're thinking of. We're not going to go there. Are you always wearing Arkeist? Are you always wearing your own creations? What do you...
So listen, I have to wear Arkeist a lot because if I'm working on something or anything I'm working on, if I'm doing something for a vacation, if I'm doing something for Saba, if I'm doing something for like St. Regis, I'm working on the scent and I have to wear it. I have to give feedback. So pretty much every day I have to like evaluate something. But I'm just I love fragrance. I'm a fragrance fanatic and I'm very happy that I have this outlet because I think if I hadn't become like a fragrance developer, maybe it would have like developed into something a little bit more obsessive. But I love perfumes and I just love, and again, this goes back into why I love all perfume. I don't like necessarily somebody telling me like, that's a bad one. I'm like, if I love it, I love it. And I really believe in everyone's right to say that. But I, again, because I'm very nostalgic, for example, like there's perfumes that I wear at specific times of the day. And again, because I have to wear a lot of different things and evaluate and work on stuff, I'm like washing my arms like several times a day because I have to try different things, right? So I'll wear sometimes like a perfume that I want to wear for an hour just because it reminds me of something or somebody or a different memory.
That's nice.
Yeah. And also when I see other perfumes that I really respect and admire and I just love also the way they smell on me, because that's the important thing. I may love a perfume, but if it doesn't work on me, maybe I'm not going to buy the bottle. But I will buy the bottle and I will keep it. And even if I don't wear it regularly, it is like for me a joy to have that and spray it even if I go to bed.
Isn't it weird how we just like to like have the bottle? You just want to have the thing.
I mean, I think when you understand all the work that goes inside that, again, I respect perfumers' work so much and also entire teams. Like everyone from the account executive to the marketing person to the fragrance developer to just everyone that's putting their heart and soul into their 9 to 5.
The photographer of the campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much work that goes in it. So, like, it just really, and again, they are a marker of a moment in time. Like, that perfume was developed because of a zeitgeist, because of something going on in the world.
The moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
It explains your love of nostalgia.
Perfumes after the Second World War, for example, in perfume history, started incorporating smoke notes because of people's experience in war. And they also moved on to, for example, like very bright, fresh florals because people were missing that. I mean, that is like large, like that's big history we're talking about.
Yeah, you're
about.
Living
that's
in a big city where there's no vegetation left. It's been bombed or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, give me the flowers. Give me the joy.
But then there's a smoke note behind it.
Because it's still there, yeah.
Because you're it's still part of your reality. And somehow you've like assimilated and incorporated that into what you smell, into what is comfortable for you.
I think that, okay, I'm like taking it like away from something very serious. So like, sorry for the hard pivot. But like, I get really emotional when I think about, and Jen and I talk about this on the show all the time, like fragrances from like our like teen years. I get weirdly, and I think this is why I always like look them up, like weirdly on my free time. I look up fragrances and ads from my teens. And
your brain's early, like, formative years. Yeah.
And I look them up. I look them up on eBay. How much are they? I did this morning. My friend Aaron, you know Aaron Kelly, we were DMing about Original Stella because we both wore it when we lived together in the Village. And then she was writing me about it. I hope she's listening. She's going to laugh. And it's like, because that's when we both first moved to New York and they don't make Original Stella anymore. I don't know what's wrong with you guys. And it's like, it's so special to me. And it's like, yeah, it was a great scent, but it's like, it just makes me think of that time. The ad makes me happy. It's like I want to time travel just back to that time for like one day. It's like looking at a photograph or like listening to a song. I'm like, I'm going to like cry.
Yeah, but yeah. and totally, I empathize with you completely. When we were working on Misfit, which is one of the Archie scents, is probably our bestseller. And
love that one.
And it was a very kind of like daunting and also complex development because it was a patchouli scent that I didn't know if it was going to go well. A lot of the feedback I got from retailers, from consumers was like, we don't like patchouli. It's just like an association with it. And we pushed forward with the idea because I thought it was like such a beautiful story.
Were you upset when they pushed back? Were you just like, meh?
No, I know. I was interested. And Arquise is an independent brand, right? It allows me like the freedom to say, well, I want to do this. And if it sells, great. And if it doesn't matter.
I'm willing to take the hit, yeah.
I'll take the hit and I'll work on something else after that. But it was so neat like that patchouli was actually discovered by the nose because it was used as a packing material as an insect repeller, moth repellent, when they were transporting fabrics and shawls and cashmere from India to Europe. And so these shawls would then be taken out of these like patchouli leaf covered trunks and they would smell of patchouli. And that's how the scent became a thing. So I thought that was a really neat story.
He left out the brothels, but we can do that on another episode.
I'm going to go there.
But bring in the brothel. Okay.
The thing was also like, because this was a luxury item, they were very expensive. And so they were purchased by people and women who had the means. But at a certain point, they start becoming like just common, passé. Like everyone has one.
Like a pashmina.
Like a pashmina. Exactly. The same.
Street pashmina.
It used to be Uma Thurman with a Prada, and now it's just a street pashmina.
Well, they start being copied and made locally in Europe, and they're no longer the handmade, beautiful, like Indian ones. And guess what? Perfumers start artificially perfuming them of patchouli. So these start like going into like second markets and they start like becoming cheap. And the people who buy them are courtesans and prostitutes. And so in literature in the second half of the 19th century, patchouli is associated with prostitutes. Also because it's a very sexy scent.
I did not know that.
I love that idea. And I was like, yes, let's talk about that. And let's like kind of reclaim that that's actually like a cool thing that like these independent women's making decisions for themselves
most of
the times, not all the times, but they were reclaiming the scent of patchouli as like something sexy and fabulous.
And it got the bohemian vibe that traveled through to the 20th century.
But just going back to what you said about like a discontinued scent that you were nostalgic for, one scent that I was really a big fan of was Gucci Envy for Men. That was like my first crush. Like that scent was my first crush. Like I was obsessed with that perfume and I wore it forever until it was discontinued. So when we were working on the formula, I loved this lavender amber thing that Gucci MV for Men has. And I brought it to Rodrigo. I brought a sample of it to Rodrigo that I still had. And he said, like, what if we incorporate something here? Because I think, like, the smoothness of this fragrance would complement the patchouli story really well. And he identified nutmeg in there as well. That nutmeg was one of the ingredients in Gucci Envy for Men that was so significant. And so we kind of, like, brought that in. So Misfit has, like, a Gucci Envy.
Nutmeg. Never hear that in a fragrance.
Oh, yeah. Those types of, like, again, spices, I think, are something that, like, just fragrances and fragrance people should go to. Nutmeg, clove, cinnamon. I think all of those can be very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's multi-layered. This is why we can't intellectualize.
Well, you can intellectualize it in a very sort of open way. I think we can. Yeah. We can.
Just don't be snobby about it.
Serious about it.
We just spent 45 minutes intellectualizing your fragrance.
Right. But just enjoy it.
Like, I'm not interested in, like, getting, like, really scientific about fragrance. I like to talk about it in, like, a...
That's why you have a Carlos around who can take your gorgeous image that you've just created for him in his mind, and he's now attaching little molecules to it and thinking it through and being like, when I talk to my nose, right. She said she wanted Stella, but she lived in New York City and her neighborhood. And I bet she was using this shampoo because all the girls were using this shampoo. Let's talk about that. What's that? So you need the translator. You need the Carlos, the developer.
That was a great time. That was a great moment.
I'm going to let you guys offline about Jess's fragrance project. But before we let you go, Carlos,
that for the future.
Yeah. Okay. I can also feed you some things she said over the years that'll get into this.
Maybe we do a fad mascara, like, duo.
Yeah. We could be here like another 3 hours. This is like crazy. All right, Jen, what do we want to talk about next?
Well, you're going to do your Fat Mascara 5. Yes, go ahead.
Carlos is like, I got to go to work. He's like, let's start the day.
This is like the best part of the day. Like, keep me on this, please. I'm happy to postpone things.
Carlos,
it's Friday.
Like, I want a spin-off pod.
Yeah. It's okay. Good. I'm just like sort of declining meeting requests.
That's very flattering. That's very flattering. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you've listened to the show. You know the FM5. All right. We're going to do quick and dirty. Ready?
All right.
Okay, what is the product that made you fall in love with fragrance?
Oh, God, I think Gucci Envy for Men.
Okay, all right. What is your favorite building in New York?
Rockefeller Center, without
That's cool.
a doubt. Yeah.
Wait, the plaza and the high-rises? Which part?
The entire complex, like all the buildings around the plaza. It's more than the plaza. It's like the puzzle of the different, like, buildings. And everything from, like, the urban layout of it, the urban planning behind it, to the Art Deco detail, to like the way that the stones are cut. They're like so beautiful. I think it's masterful.
This is a bonus one. It's just tacked on. I've just thought of it. I don't want you to like slander any architects or like offend anyone, but is there a building or place in New York that confounds you? Just because New York is changing so much. And I'm curious if there's something that confounds you.
There's a lot of like residential buildings that I just don't get. A lot of like the crazy high rises on 57th, you know, Billionaires Row. I just don't understand the height for height's sake. I think some of them are so ugly.
I've watched a lot of YouTube videos on them and it's like really fascinating. A, how empty they are, which you're probably all aware.
Yeah.
And just like how, I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It's just so soulless and empty.
Really soulless. I think that it's like something that's happened in a lot of things. It's happened in fashion. It's happened in architecture, certainly. It's a lot of like, it's this just lowest common denominator, like the most normalized bad taste. But because it's expensive, we celebrate it and that's worth something. I think that's exhausting at this point. I can't see another designer doing a potato chip handbag. Please, like, let's do something else.
Thank you for your professional opinion. That was great. Do you have a favorite book?
Oh, God.
He's got many leather-bound books behind him, so you can just grab one.
Right. I have a few.
Just take something.
I love, like, Vladimir Nabokov's Speak Memory. That sounds like I'm, like, a very snobby reader. I'm not.
No.
It's a beautiful memory.
Oh, he's a synesthete. He's like, he loved color and words, and it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and also, like, it's his autobiography. And the way he talks about just growing up and the house he lived in and his family and just the things that he's interested in, I think is really beautiful. It's a very easy book to read.
Are you saying that for me? It's a very you easy book it. To read.
Oh, no, 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 no.
No, no.
No, because I mean it in sort of like it's a very...
It goes quickly because you're just immersed.
Okay.
I'm the kind of reader...
You're selling it to me.
I'm the kind of reader. I'm not a great reader. I will go through every sentence and be like, to make sure that I understand. Like, I'm not the type of person that just like goes, all good, all digested and everything. I have to really focus on stuff. So sometimes I like books that I'm like, oh, good, easy. Not like 1,000 things I need to take into account.
Okay, I'll check it out. Favorite smell from childhood?
Orange blossom. From Eau de Cologne, orange blossom. Again, very kind of like classic 4711 type thing that was like the first sort of scent that like I had
Spanish
as a child.
Spanish laundry detergent, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they would like comb my hair with Eau de Cologne. So I remember, I'm probably terrible for the hair, which is probably why I'm where I am right now.
No, it suits you.
But it, you know, it was like
he
just
has a
like,
close crop for those who can't see him. Very close crop.
It's a very close crop. But I think it's like sort of like we were perfumed as like children. And it was always with that very clean orange blossom.
Last question. Best advice you hold on to?
Treasure and protect and take care of what you have in life. And the good people around you. Don't push forward and onwards without acknowledging and having gratitude for the people that have helped you get there. And protect that. We can't take that lightly. Anything that you have positive, there's a lot of challenges in life, but anything positive, focus on that, be grateful for that, and make sure you nurture it because that will help you expand that.
That's really good advice.
Yeah, when you focus solely on like the future and you forget what you have right now and forget what people have done for you and just all the little moments, I think that's like very dangerous.
Well, zero commentary from us. We can end our podcast on that. Absolutely yeah. A wonderful piece of advice. Carlos, thank you so much for coming on Fat Mascara.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so delighted to talk to you guys.
This was a fun one.
I could go on for like hours.
Part 2 coming soon.
Yeah.
Thank you, Carlos.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com.
We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Razor One product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.